Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Unlock big savings and add style and security to your home with high-quality Schlage door locks from Menards. Whether you're looking for a traditional interior lock or a Wi-Fi compatible electronic lock, Menards has you covered. With more than 200 options of Schlage door locks in stock, save big on all door locks. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
From NBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice. Crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff.
Hello, everybody, and welcome. I thought you were going to start the show.
Yeah, I like what everybody liked when Mike started the show.
All right, cool. Hey, everybody, welcome back to Truth and Justice. This is your Friday follow up for season 11, episode 1. Finally got started on the new season. Definitely got a lot of questions on social media this week. I got Bob here. I got Zach here. Let's do this.
Texas Ranger James Holland is a legendary interrogator. They call him the serial killer whisperer.
You can't hide those indications, and that's why yesterday I knew that he did it.
But now, shocking interrogation tapes reveal how the super cop really operates.
And that's why they asked me to come in, because I'm special.
From Something Else, The Marshall Project, and Sony Music Entertainment, this is Smokescreen. Just say you're sorry. Listen and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All righty. Well, Mike, that was a fantastic introduction. I was going to try to take my job back this week, but our listeners have spoken, and they said they like it better when you start the show. So good job.
Thank you.
Alrighty, so this week's episode, The Perfect Rack, told the basic story of what happened on July 14th, 2004, when Emerson Boyorquez, and I hope I looked up and went through pronunciations, and I think that's how his name is pronounced, but I certainly mean no disrespect if that's not how you pronounce it. There's like a famous athlete or football player with the same last name and pronounces it differently, so I'm not real sure. But this episode kind of gave you the baseline of the story. Zach, what'd you think?
This new case is really interesting, and I'm excited to jump into it. This whole premise of what's going on is baffling to me. Of this big shootout, and they have witnesses all over the place, and all these names, but we're missing a name. And that's just, it really jumps out to me. And this is going to be a fun one.
Yeah, the case is insane. I can't wait to break it down further. You know, as I said, it's not too often I come into a season where I'm telling you, like, this dude is innocent. Like, he absolutely didn't do this. And it's a story that needs to be told. There's corruption that needs to be exposed. And I'm looking forward to sharing the, and I'm already finding new things as I'm reading and investigating, as I'm, you know, my intention was really more to tell the story leading into where Pablo's at in his appeals process. But as I'm digging in, I told you guys when you walked in this morning, it's like, I'm already hooked, claws are in. I'm shooting off letters to lawyers about things that I found or things that I'm looking for. But yes, super interesting. I'm looking forward to digging in further and sharing more of the story. Zach, I see you got some notes there. What else you got?
You know, I found it really strange with Adrian naming names in the second interview compared to the first interview, right? And why he wouldn't name. I don't know if he's trying to hide something, because the first interview is relatively quickly after the incident. Am I right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, why is he trying to not name names if he knows these people, but then... I mean, maybe I guess he's just not afraid 10 years later or whatever it is.
Yeah, well, I don't think it was ever that he was afraid. I touched on it a little bit, I think just in a sentence or two. What he says later, and we'll hear more of these interviews later as we go along, but what he says in his 2017 interview is that he didn't want the police to go after these guys because he wanted to handle it himself. So at the time, and I'm not speaking out of turn here. His own words were that I was just dumb, and I had this I want to take care of these guys myself mentality.
No, you're 100%. That was in the episode, and I didn't even think about it that way or take it that way. I don't know why. I mean, I completely heard that in the episode. I don't know why I didn't take it that way.
Yeah, but I'm great. So it is interesting. And then also, there's more to it. They're going to hear in the coming episodes. But he knew. So he doesn't know the guys who beat him up and killed him, but he knows who they are.
Okay.
And we
do believe these are the same people that he had the altercation with on Monday.
That's what he says. Yeah.
From everything we know, that's who these people are.
Yeah. And there, as we go forward, there's more witnesses that confirm some of that stuff that we'll get into. But so he kind of goes into the investigation with the police with some kind of assumptions being made. Essentially, and again, we'll get into more details. Essentially, everyone knows who did it.
Mm-hmm.
He believes the police know who did it. And so they're like, hey, you know, look at this photo spread. Which one is it? And so essentially the way he describes it, when he points someone out, and he wasn't just saying like that guy did, he didn't think he was trying to show them, hey, did any of these guys do this? It was like, which one of these guys is Shorty? It's that guy.
Okay.
You know, based on there's a lot more to it than that, but essentially he made some assumptions about what was going on. It was one of those things where everything seemed so obvious, you know, and then, you know, the trial happens and they're like, this guy did it. And he's like, who the hell is this guy?
Yeah.
He did. So yeah, it's pretty complex what happened, and it's pretty complex how much effort was put in by the police and the DA's office to get a conviction against someone who was obviously innocent.
You know, you touched on the episode and it struck me is obviously there's more to that altercation than what we know.
Right.
Which is neither here nor there because it doesn't really tie into the case. That's not who's passed away. That's not right. Who's convicted. But it just is strange that he said, I didn't do anything, but then they were out to get me.
It's important when it comes to victimology for us to understand how and why something happened. And that's why I always focus on victimology. And so with Adrian, it was, as I'm looking, it's like, it's funny because I was thinking the same thing that we heard the prosecutor, the ADA Smith say in the interview, because,
mm-hmm.
You know, he's saying, he's like, yeah, she called me and said, they want to fight you one-on-one. He's like, who wants to fight you one-on-one? The guys have beat me up before. Well, which one of them? Well, he wanted to fight me one-on-one. And then then the prosecutor, the DA just says it. He's like, why would they kicked your ass? Why would they want to? So and this is just pure speculation on my part. And as I said, it doesn't particularly matter because what happened to Emerson or who the shooters were or any of that. I just feel like it was, in my opinion, like it was the other way around that he was saying, especially because the witnesses were saying, you know, he comes walking up, pulling his shirt off.
Mm-hmm.
It just seemed more to me, again, just based on speculation that he was like, I'm going to go kick your ass one-on-one now. Makes more sense to me than them saying, now that we beat you up, all three of us, now we want to beat you up one-on-one.
It is a strange case, too, that I don't feel like you've taken on before because there is a living victim. You know, that's a very strange component to this where obviously we do have Emerson that passed from this shooting.
Right.
But he really wasn't the intention of the attack.
Right.
So it's going to be a strange build for you.
No one even knows how he was killed. It's weird. Listen, so far, all the witness statements that I've read and listened to, everybody's like, you know, like Adrian and Escobar both said, you know, he was a kid. He's a 17-year-old kid. They're like, you know, wait in the back seat. They get out and walk forward. The other witnesses says, I saw Adrian walking up and I saw Escobar behind him. Nobody saw Emerson. And so everybody, you know, and then there's, you know, the shooting and everybody's fleeing for cover. Jason's chasing after Adrian, continuing to shoot at him, and Claudius chasing Jason, and then they get in and nobody realizes that then laying there dying on the pavement is 17-year-old Emerson. And it just seemed like nobody that was there witnessing the event even noticed him, which makes sense because where would the focus have been? The guy running down the parking lot firing a gun at two guys that are running away. Where, you know, and so it seems to me that he was in between the shooter in the blue shirt and where Adrian was, if he was firing across at Adrian.
Also, a really strange thing that came in my head while listening to this episode that really has nothing to do with it. What the hell is the drinking age in Texas in 2004?
I was wondering the same thing. I'm sure it was 21.
Yeah. I mean, it seemed they were all 19-ish is what it sounds like.
Yeah.
Just in there partying it up every week.
Mm-hmm.
That was that really struck me straight. I know it has nothing to do with the case. It just was one of those.
I thought the exact same thing when because I actually looked. I had to go look up Adrian's birthday because I was like, wait a minute, because I just wanted to know for context sake how old everyone was when I was telling the story, and then it was like, he's 19, he's 17, this guy's 19, he's 20. Like, how are they in there drinking all the time? But then also the more research I've been doing, like that club was just known for there was a ton of violence, constant fights. It was a rough joint. From the interviews with a lot of the witnesses, they all kind of said the same thing. It was a Latino hangout. Most of the patrons there were Hispanic, and there was a lot of gang members there. There was a lot of fights. It was just a rough place. And so maybe it was just the type of place where, you know, they didn't give a shit.
All right, let's jump into these questions, guys. Our first one comes from Lauren. I know nowadays trucks and their drivers are easier to track with GPS, but did the company that Pablo worked for have some sort of tracking system on their trucks? To this, Chris adds, I was wondering the same thing. Didn't they have to fill out a logbook at that time?
They did. The logbook is going to come. We'll be talking about the logbook not on Sunday, but next week. But yeah, they're definitely, there is a logbook that comes in. A lot of what we're going to see, I don't mean to tie this with the logbook, is that there was the biggest problem that Pablo had in this case. One of the biggest problems was suppressed evidence that wasn't turned over to his defense.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Adrian says, just for background, in 2006, a few companies were using electronic logs, but most were still using paper logs, which were entirely filled out by the driver and easy to lie on. I started truck driving in 2008 and didn't use e-logs until 2017. In 2008, my truck's location would ping city and state a few times an hour. Now my company can see exactly what parking spot I'm in at any moment of the day. What do you think, Bob?
Yeah, so in this case, they were paper logs, and that's it. So timeline gets real, as you're going to see in this week's episode, and it'll even get even more cleared up next week. Timeline's a big issue for Adrian because he was arrested over a month after the crime.
Okay.
So after over a month goes by, he doesn't have cell phone records. He has his truck log where he just writes in, you know, when he's off duty and where he was driving, things like that, which are, you know, in some cases aren't. Put it this way, every single log happens on an exact hour.
Okay.
You know, so like he was driving here, gets there at midnight. It's never like arrived at 12:58, you know, anything like that.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. So they're basically tracking where he's at. I'll tell you this, even when he gives his initial timeline, we know now that it's wrong, but he didn't have all that information to base it on. So yeah, there were paper log books. There was no digital logbooks, and in his logbook, in a way, what you'll hear about Sunday was kind of used against him.
Mm-hmm. Well, I could see that because even some of the times that he laid out in the episode himself seemed a little strange to me. You know, I mean, he does talk about that he had to sit at the truck stop
for like 20 minutes.
But at some point, he says he's in Houston at 12:30, 12:45.
Right.
But then he goes back and says that he's not there, you know, he doesn't get home until 2, which I understand that Houston's a big city, you have to drive across it.
Yeah.
And there's some time, but I mean, there was some timing issues in there that I felt were kind of weird.
So I left that the way that he did it because I think it speaks to the kind of the process that went through in the case. So like he says, it was like 12:30, 12:45 or so, he's estimating in his mind when he gets to Houston So then he kind of backs into trying to figure out more exactly where. And what they found out later, this was after trial. He gets phone records and he shows that he made this call. He remembers making the call when he was in Dallas. It pinged a tower in Dallas and it was at 8:58 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially 9 p.m. Well, that drive, and he said four and a half hours. Some people on the fan pages said, oh, you can make that drive in 3.5.
So I Googled it just to look, and obviously it's modern day highways, right? Modern day systems. One route is 3 hours, one route's like 3.5, and there is a route that's 4.
So the main, I can't remember the name, it's 45 or something. There's the main mm-hmm. highway that shoots straight down. When I drove it, the last time I drove that was when Ed Ace was released in prison. I flew into Dallas, and then I drove from Dallas down to Houston because I had to work in both places that week. And it took me a good 4 hours, little spots, traffic here and there.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go back to 2004, I would, and if we're talking to people around the area, most people are like, yeah, it's a 4 hour drive from Dallas to Houston. Also, both of them are big cities with traffic. So it depends where you're at
mm-hmm.
in there.
But you're also traveling, he is traveling at night. So you're going to have
so there shouldn't be much traffic unless there's construction, things like that could still slow. And there's still a lot of congestion there. But also remember, he's driving a semi truck with a trailer on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if the speed limit's 70 now. I don't know if it was 70 in 2004.
Well, trucks still have a slower speed limit.
55 usually.
55, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. So today, the truck will have 10 minutes. So he's driving a semi truck. It was longer ago. So I think, I wouldn't say probably 4.5, but 4.
Okay.
Four, and the fact that he's a truck driver who makes that drive all the time. And he's mm-hmm. like, it takes 4.5 hours to make that drive. So saying 4 hours. So then you kind of backed into that test. So he's like, okay, so if I was in Dallas at 9 and you add 4 hours, that puts me in Houston at 1, which is pretty close to what he thought, mm-hmm. right? 12:30, 12:45. But then when they got to Houston, they had stopped and, waited at the truck stop for 20 minutes for his driver's wife to pick him up. And he testifies at trial and confirms that. And they even, how do you know it was that day? Besides the truck log, how do you know it was that day? Well, he remembers it very clearly because his son was born 2 days later.
Okay.
And his son was born on a Friday, and he happened to be home when he's usually not because of that breakdown. So his driver confirms. So it's 1:20 in the morning. Then he has to drive from that location to his parents' house. To his mom's house, and he said it's like 40 minutes to get there, because as you heard mentioned a little bit, like, I can't take the small streets because he's driving a semi,
mm-hmm.
so he's got to take big roads. Takes him like 40 minutes to get over to his mom's house. That right there is putting you at around 2 a.m. and then then he showers and stuff, and then he ends up going over to his ex-girlfriend's house.
Do we know? I mean, I know this is coming later, but do we know geographically, like, how close his mom's house is to where that perfect rack is, or where his girlfriend's house is compared to that perfect rack?
Yeah, I don't have that information because that's coming up in an episode where I'm going to do a time, but I have started poking around through it. The tricky part about Houston is it's so big and the traffic is so bad all the time. It's really difficult. So, like, you can punch into Google Maps and it'll show you. Or Apple Maps, whatever. Oh, you can make that drive in 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. But in reality, can you make it in 30 minutes? Maybe you can make it in 25. Maybe it's 40. And if you're in a semi, you can't even take the route that it's telling you to take. So it's really hard to piece together. So for me, the bigger part of it really doesn't have to do even with his girlfriend going over to the girlfriend's house. I personally think that the shooting happened before he got home to his parents' house in the first place. Before he ever got out of the semi. I personally don't, and it's really hard to lock all that down, of course, because, mm-hmm. It took 20 minutes. Was it 15 minutes? Was it 25 minutes? Was it 18 minutes?
Well, and not knowing the actual time of the shooting is rough, too, to put on there. And, they say it's about closing time, but what is about closing time?
Well, we have a pretty good time on the, I mentioned it briefly at the beginning of the episode, but the first 911 call came in at 2:06 a.m.
Okay.
About shots being fired. So I would imagine within 2-3 minutes of that, because that call didn't even mention Emerson. It just said there was people shooting there. So I would say 2:04, 2:05 is probably when it happens. The bar closed at 2. So it all fit, somewhere between 2 a.m. and 2:05 a.m. is when the shooting happened.
Roger that.
So if he didn't get home to his mom's house in the semi until 2 a.m., then it would be impossible for this to happen or for him to be involved.
Sarah's got a couple questions here. First, were both Monica and Claudia Adrian's girlfriend, meaning romantic partner? If so, could Claudia have set him up with Jason Woolley and company?
I don't know about her setting him up. I don't think so. But yeah, it kind of sounds like he was, they had a couple girlfriends. You know, so he refers to Claudia as his baby mama. I don't know that he even really refers. I didn't use that term on the main show because I feel like it's just, I said, I refer to my ex-wife as that one time. We're very good friends, by the way. But I was joking around one time and I was like, this is my baby mama. And she told me to never call her that again. So I don't use the phrase too much. But I have to go back and look and see if Adrian really says that she's his girlfriend at that point. I think they still have some kind of relationship. And sounds like he also had another thing going on with Monica.
Well, Claudia talks about giving money for a dog.
Right. Yeah.
And that seems strange if they're not in some sort of relationship.
Yeah, there's all kinds of dynamics there that I don't know or get. But yeah, there was something like he said he knew someone was selling a pit bull. And so he came to get $50 from her to go buy the pit bull. But in the story, he never picks up a pit bull.
Yeah, that's a strange one.
Or goes home. I don't necessarily buy all. I mean, Adrian is a victim in this. I don't necessarily buy all of his details.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Next, Sarah wants to know, why was the DA's office re-interviewing witnesses and victims in 2017?
Because of Pablo's habeas filing. He'd filed habeas with newly discovered evidence and was seeking exoneration for under actual innocence. And so the DA's office was investigating. We'll get into where things went with that. I don't even particularly know exactly how things shook out with that habeas writ. I know a new filing was just made by his attorneys like last week, that we'll be getting into later. But listening to the interviews, I was actually impressed with the way that ADA Smith conducted them. I don't know if he took the information and actually used it, but you know, he was pretty clear with everybody's interviewing. He says several times for all these interviews that, you know, if Pablo's not the guy who did it, then he doesn't need to be in jail. We just want the truth when he's doing them. And he does push back on some things, but in some cases, like with Adrian, when he says, you know, why would they want to kick your ass, or you know, why would they want revenge on you? I mean, those are same questions I would have. So, but that's why it was for the habeas appeal.
Lene says, Zach, what do you think about Bob describing blue shirt guy as using an assault rifle?
So I actually, this is the very first note I had in my phone. I showed Mike earlier, which I thought was funny because I had made that note before I saw this comment. And I honestly wasn't even going to bring it up on the show. I was just going to talk to you about it outside the show. But
I know your stance.
But since a listener brought it up, we'll talk about it for a second. We don't need to go on to it for a long time. I'm not a huge fan of that term, of the assault weapon, assault rifle, whatever it may be.
Right.
I'm a firm believer that, you know, this is a military style weapon. You can call it a semi-automatic weapon. You can call it a tactical weapon, a tactical rifle, whatever you want to call it. Assault is an action. There's no such thing as an assault rifle.
I don't disagree. I thought of you as I was writing it. And this is the question I have for you. When I said assault rifle, did you know what I was talking about?
I 100% knew, and that's why I wasn't going to bring it up, because I knew what you were talking about.
Yeah. And so did the listeners. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they would have quite understood what I was getting at if I said it was a semi-automatic, long gun, tactical. So I decided to go with assault rifle. She actually calls it a machine gun at one point.
Mm-hmm.
And as it turns out, we'll or later, it's not even what we would consider to be what most people would consider to be an assault rifle.
So it's just some sort of rifle is what we know at this moment, a semi-automatic rifle.
It's somewhere between what people know as an assault rifle and what people know as a Uzi.
Okay. Interesting.
Lynn's got a couple questions here. First, So Claudia gives Adrian money and her cell phone, and Adrian leaves the pool hall with Monica. Then Claudia summons him back to the pool hall, and investigators don't find this suspicious of drug dealing behavior. I already questioned the credibility of these three witnesses. What are your thoughts about this?
To be clear, he didn't leave with the I think you're blending the two incidents. He was with Monica at the club on Monday night when he got his ass kicked. I don't think Monica, unless I missed something, but I don't believe Monica was there on Wednesday or had anything to do with the Wednesday night situation. And as we talk, yeah, looking at the consistency with Claudia throughout, I don't really question her credibility or Alice. And even Adrian, as far as like the events that he described, seem to line up with things. It's just, I feel like he's just trying to sanitize himself a bit in the whole thing, as though he was completely an innocent victim. And it just doesn't seem that that's the way things shook out to me.
That's completely how it comes across to me, too, is I don't think that he's necessarily not believable. Like, I do think he's probably pointing in the right direction, but I agree that he's just trying to make himself appear a little better.
Well, yeah, for example, when he describes him walking up, he's like, and I came walking up to him. And then he pulls out a gun, starts shooting. He completely leaves out the fact that he came walking up and pulled his shirt off on his way up to fight, which when someone's walking up to you and taking their shirt off, that's usually only for one reason.
Next, Lynn says, these characters, excluding Pablo, seem to have a much longer history and more entwined lives than they're willing to reveal to investigators. Do you agree?
If you're talking about the characters you just mentioned, which would be Alice, Claudia, and Adrian, I mean, it seemed pretty clear there. I don't know how Alice really fits into all of it other than being friends with Claudia. But as far as if we're talking about the other names that were named, which was Jason Woolley, who obviously, I mean, there's no question Jason Woolley did it. He admitted he did it. And I said in the episode he confessed and said he'd take the hit himself. And then later he says that he only fired a warning shot and doesn't know the guys. That kind of was his original story. I knew that he had confessed, but he still went to trial and was convicted. But that's kind of what he said in his original was I was there. I took the shot. And then he did at one point say he's going to take the hit himself. He's not going to rat out anybody else who was there. But he never really comes out and says in his initial confession that he pulled the trigger and shot.
But you're saying his story is not plausible. That he pulled his gun out and fired a warning shot and some other random person.
He ruined their ambush. They were planning on ambushing Adrian.
So that's not plausible to you?
No, it's not plausible at all to me. And then, by the way, gets into their car and drives away with them, as seen by multiple witnesses. So, yeah. No, I don't buy it. But as far as their connections, we're going to start digging into the weeds on Sunday. And yes, there is definitely some connections between these people.
All right, and Lynn's last question, our last question of the episode. How did Pablo get on the police's radar?
Well, that's the question, right? That's what we're going to be talking about this week. As I said, that, you know, Pablo was never really a part of this case, even in his own trial. His name was hardly mentioned at all. And so this week's episode, in 2 days, on Sunday, is the state's case against Pablo Velez. Make sure you check it out. See you next week.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production and is distributed by Wondery. Produced and edited by Mike Bussing, and all music for the show was created and composed by PutThemInASong.com. Our follow-up logo was created by Zach Weaver, and all of our font across all of our logos and banners were created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. You can find more of Tate's work on Etsy. Thank you to Katie Ross of CreatedInTandem.com for designing, creating, managing, and maintaining our website, Truth and Justice Pod, where you can view all photos and documents discussed in every episode. And a big thank you to our transcription team, Pamela Westby, Kathy McElaney, Charlena White, Kaywood Yomnick, Ginger Fiola, Edith Swanneck, Lindsay Pease, Erica Cantor, and Jen Reese Incandela. And as always, thank you to all of you for all of your engagement and support. If you like the show and you'd really like to support us, you can do so in a number of ways. To financially support the show, you can go to patreon.com/truthandjustice. On the Patreon page, you can pledge as little as $3 a month, and we also have reward levels on Patreon that include access to behind-the-scenes videos of the tapings of our Friday follow-up episodes, ad-free versions of all of our episodes, Truth and Justice Army t-shirts and hats, and even the opportunity to co-host one of our Friday follow-up episodes. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. And lastly, you can always support us by supporting the companies that sponsor this program. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider for future seasons, you can submit your cases on our website, Truth and Justice Pod. Just click the case submission button and fill out the form. And the most important thing that you can do is engage in the investigations. You can keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. For all of you tweeters, you can connect with us on Twitter at @TruthJusticePod. To follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at @BobRuffTruth. Mike can be found at MurbGaming, MURRBGAMING, and Zach is at @Z2TheQ. And don't forget that we always have our 24/7 voicemail line open for questions, comments, and tips on our cases. That phone number is 269-224-2833. However you do it, stay engaged, stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Mike Bussing.
And this has been Truth and Justice.
Yes, there's definitely a lot of intertwinement between a lot of these people.
Intertwinement.
That's a word I just made up.
Not a word.
Let's go again.
Not a word.
Not a word.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand-new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.